All right, let's begin this evening's meeting of the Finance and Facilities Committee, January 3rd, 2011. I'd like you to take just a few minutes and review the board or the Finance Committee minutes from December 6th and December 13th, 2010.
Yep.
Okay, so we're in agreement that the minutes are as written. I'd like to just change, I guess I do this every Finance Committee meeting. We're going to move class size targets to the first item this evening, and then we'll proceed with the regular, the agenda as outlined. So Lori, would you like to just take a few minutes to make the presentation?
Hopefully you have the report in front of you, and it basically is the first step in the class size target process, and that's to come here to Finance Committee. And our recommendation is to maintain what we have had over the last several years, which is the 20 to 22 for K-2, 23 to 25 for grade 3, 25 to 27, grades 4 through 5, and 26 to 28, grades 6 through 8, with the opportunity to review targets if we are finding academic performance at a particular school or grade level is not comparative or consistent with others at that grade level across the district. So that's where we are, and this item is for discussion today, and then if the Finance Committee is supportive of it, we will be bringing it to the full board at the January 18th meeting for discussion and then action at the first meeting in February.
So this is no change over the last 2 years?
No, there is no change.
Now the reason this is going to Finance, because it looks like, what is the purpose of it, funneling it through Finance, I guess?
That's a great question.
That's a really good question. I guess you could say habit. But a courtesy, so.
Okay. That's the way we've proceeded in previous years.
Okay. We've decided, which is a little bit related to the conversation we're going to have at the board level when we talk about process.
Okay.
But with some, exceptions here and there, we've tried to establish a process that whenever financial resources are involved in a decision, that we begin that conversation here and that we take it through, really a three-step process, three opportunities for board members to respond to that expenditure. So first comes to Finance, even as a perfunctory item, then to the board for discussion, and then for action. Part of that could be, even with a perfunctory sort of arrangement as this is, there may be a year where either we have an interest in changing that, or you may have concerns or think that there's a reason we should be looking at it. So we feel like if it involves a large expenditure of the district's resources, the conversation should begin here.
From a policy standpoint, is there a procedure or a policy in place that said that we're going to check this on an annual basis in Finance?
No.
Okay, so this is
just a practice.
Would it make sense to put it on that schedule that Bob has?
Well, it's in Lori keeps. We all keep a calendar of activities that come before the board on a regular basis. We call it, kind of board tracking. And so that's on Lori's board tracking. That is something she brings forward every year at about this time. If we create a calendar for Finance, we certainly could put that on there.
And our board item for Finance, it is tracked on our on the list that we keep every year.
So it's also on your list?
Mm-hmm. Yes, it is.
Okay. Okay, so it's I guess my, and I understand that we're bringing it in. It's again, it's somewhat. There's no real change. We're basically renewing a policy. I'm just thinking, how do we make sure that we don't forget 1 year if we're doing this? So, but if it's on the tracking calendar.
Mm-hmm. It's in the internal departmental calendars.
In two departments.
Yes.
In two departments, right.
Is there any reason that we would want to change that? Is there any
reason to change the timing of it?
No, to change the class sizes.
We're saying no at this point, unless there's a situation that comes up as we've had the last two springs. Right.
We still reserve the right to do that.
Answer for you.
But these are the targets.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I had an earlier conversation with Bob about the, you know, some thinking I had had about perhaps bringing forward an idea to change the targets for Churchill and Lincoln based on their demographics, that perhaps they should have lower class size targets. But Bob and I had a brief conversation about it, and at this point, it's not a strong enough interest of mine to say, you know what, I'd like us to reconsider and rethink and make permanent Churchill having lower targets or Lincoln having lower targets. I think we have a process in place that allows us to ask for that.
And I'm kind of troubled with that, in that it's kind of like the discussion that we had about, can we have a school of 450 and a school of 750 and have parity in terms of education. That's mm-hmm. harder to do. Mm-hmm. And if you roll in segregate numbers, mm-hmm. I think potentially that
it could open
the district to.
Well, we have our own challenges at our schools.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Which is why I'm not bringing the idea forward for a full discussion.
Okay. Okay. Thank you, Lori.
Thanks, Lori.
Thanks, Lori.
Thank you.
Lori, you should come to the finance forum.
Thank you for the invitation, but I don't have insurance. With my code numbers.
Okay. Thank you. So then, the next order of business this evening will be a discussion of the. The district went out for a request for proposal for auditor services. As you know, Baker Tilly has been the auditor with the district for a number of years. However, we had indicated to the finance committee and the board that this year we would go out for audit services, which we've done. On December 14th, we posted notice in our paper of general circulation that publishes throughout our school district. Mm-hmm. Our school district, and we sent out 8 RFPs to regional firms. We received 5 responses. They were from the firms of Miller Cooper, Matheson Moiske, Evans Marshall, Klein Hall, and again the incumbent Baker Tilly. On the first page of your committee report here, I've broken out and included a summary sheet in terms of what the annual fees will be. Down towards the end there, as you can see, the fees were broken out for the annual audit fees, the single audit, and then the total audit fee for each year. We've also included what the total cost would be for the three-year audit period. We also included some information in terms of the number of employees and the number of clients that each firm has. On December 9th, Phyllis and I and Drew, as the finance committee and board member, selected three firms that we interviewed on December 9th. They were the firms of Miller Cooper, Matthews and Moiske, and the incumbent Baker Tilly. We did not include Evans Marshall and Klein Hall in the interview process because we thought they were a much smaller size firm. They have between 5 and 10 total employees and just really didn't feel as though they were capable of performing the responsibilities that our audit requires. As I said, we spoke with the 3 audit firms that I've mentioned previously, and then again on December 10th, Phyllis, Drew, and I met, and we had sort of developed a preset, if you want to call it a matrix, in terms of things that we were going to look at during the interview process and then what we were going to finally make our decision. I would tell you that we each auditor spent about 45 minutes with us, and then the following day we met for about an hour and a half or 2 hours and reviewed the matrix that we had set up. And we believe that we came to consensus and that our recommendation would be to maintain the relationship with Baker Tilly. Their fees are a little bit higher than the next firm, which would be Matthews and Moiske. but we felt for the reasons that we've indicated in the board report that that would be the firm that we would recommend maintaining the relationship with. Any questions? Any comments, Drew, that you'd like to add, or Phyllis?
Quite honestly, you know, really there were only two firms that I think had the auditing horsepower to be able to pull off our audit, because we really need to have enough people within the firm to be able to do the independent review of the audit work. And you know, if I just compare Miller Cooper and Baker Tilly, I mean, they're roughly the same dollar amount. You know, Miller Cooper is a little bit more, but I mean, they're close. And I guess our thought process was to change, pay more, and have the year or two interruption factor. It made more sense to kind of stay with Baker Tilly. I liked Moisey, but I was very concerned that they weren't big enough to be able to do the rotation and the independence of the audit that you really need for an audit of the scope that the district calls for.
And I think one of the high points that Baker Tilly mentioned was their available external resources to assist in the fraud detection process. Drew did ask pointedly a question regarding their ability to detect fraud, and one of the auditors is currently assigned to our account is one of their fraud specialists. So they mentioned that on several different occasions during the interview. That is a very one of the higher level issues that, you know, as an auditor, we're trying to detect any types of fraud that may or may not exist. And they brought it up on a couple of different occasions. And they have sort of the highest level of expertise in that particular field.
I think across the board, they bring the most to the table in terms of best practices, in terms of seeing what's going on with other districts, and they are like the preeminent school auditor. Mm-hmm. So you've got the benefit of all the other, you know, best practices that they bring to us, and meeting with that and going through the audit this year, you know, they came to us with all their best practices, and you know, we could do this, we could do this, and they, for the additional cost, I just don't think it makes sense not to stay with them.
So our intentions are for this evening's discussion. We're looking for support as we bring this recommendation forward to the board, and we would bring that for discussion on January 18th and then final approval on February 7th. So, any other questions? Do I hear a consensus that the Finance Committee will support this, our recommendation?
Absolutely.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much, and then we'll move that forward in January and February. The next order of business this evening is the Glenbard Area Property Tax Appeals Cooperative, and we have an attached intergovernmental agreement. Over the years, we have been asked, our district as well as many other districts in the area have been asked to look for possible methods of sort of partnering with our neighboring districts in hopes of reducing costs for a particular service that all districts need to have in place. As such, we've had conversations amongst business managers of the Glenbard Area Consortium districts regarding the sharing of legal coverage for property tax appeals. We've met with Francis and Sullivan. We believe that we have a majority of the members of the consortium that are willing to join this particular consortium, legal consortium. And we would be looking to bring this to the board or to the Finance Committee for support as we move forward. And then we would take it to the board for discussion and action again in January and February.
Bob, who's spearheading this? I mean, the memo is actually sent to Chris McLean.
Yeah.
Is it Glenbard that's spearheading this, or are we? How is it? How are the players kind of?
I would say that it's a shared interest amongst everyone, and being that Glenbard 87 is the high school district, they're sort of pulling it all together, which is rather typical for this particular type of arrangement.
Did they initiate the conversation around this one? So we initiated the conversation around transportation. Did Glenbard initiate this conversation?
You know,
when I went to the meeting of the consortium members. That's the sense I got, is that Chris McLean, being in the past year, has encountered the appeals, and he's been, calling the elementary district that's involved in the same parcel, saying, hey, what are you going to do about mm-hmm. this? So instead of making all these six different calls, because basically if they're affected, one of the elementary districts mm-hmm. are going to be affected. So he basically, I got the idea that he started talking with Francis Sullivan about the idea getting the documentation together, and then did a voice call, in talking with his colleagues with it,
I had a similar arrangement when I was in District 113 with our feeder districts, and there were two benefits to it. One, we saved money. Mm-hmm. Two, we had a shared agreement around what we would appeal. Because you can get tax appeals that range from anything from $100,000 to, what could be millions of dollars. And so we had, rather than coming at it from disparate viewpoints that could translate poorly into the community, we were all on the same page with one another.
Now, we've got the memo from Franzik to McLean, and then we've got the intergovernmental agreement. I mean, I assume the intergovernmental agreement doesn't restrict anybody from... doesn't have a dollar value associated with it, right? It's just that memo that really talks
That's
about
correct.
What we're going to go after or
but
what we might go after.
I will say that we have a practice, and it's a practice that has been, that Francis has recommended, that we not protest residential property tax appeals, but rather commercial property tax appeals. Mm-hmm. And a little later in the agenda this evening, we'll be talking about two commercial pieces of property in particular. But so we don't protest the residential appeals.
If we had some really, really expensive homes, we might.
Really we might. But as a practice, we do not appeal residential properties.
Have we done this in the past?
Yes.
Well,
appeals?
Every time we get a commercial, every time we get an appeal, we send it on to Francis Sullivan. We then have a conversation, and ARIS typically will recommend that we don't fight an appeal from a residential property owner, but commercial property owners we do contest.
We did share resources with the Commonwealth as an appeal.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so we've done this in the past. We're not forging new
no.
path. We've done similar agreements and similar intergovernment agreements with the different districts.
Well, we have various intergovernmental agreements regarding a variety of different types of issues that face the school district. But as Phyllis just pointed out, we did have an issue with Commonwealth Edison a couple of years that went back 3 or 4 or 5 years. And a group of school districts participated in that process of sort of contesting their appeal of a decision that was rendered at the DuPage Board of Appeals.
But is this so theoretically this cooperative could run for years and years and years of time?
And theoretically, what it does then is sort of legitimize what we currently do in practice.
So we're essentially doing this. All we're doing is formalizing it.
I would say now we're formalizing it in practice.
With a broader agreement that has no ending point to it. And it's not specific to a particular appeal. The consortia would decide as a collective whether to pursue something. Now, that, I don't believe, prohibits an individual district for pursuing should the consortia not, but the individual district want it to.
Sure.
If we decide to step out of the agreement for a particular parcel of property, we can do that. Mm-hmm. But in general, we would proceed as a group with regards to any appeal. appeals.
I think this is really good. I think this is, give me a downside. Why is there a downside to doing this?
I don't know that there is a downside in this particular recommendation here. I think it's a plus for everyone.
Particularly since we aren't altering our attorney relationship either, because we are already with Brandzik. Sometimes you might have a joint agreement, and it may be true that some of our other member districts use another firm than Brandzik, but would agree to use Brandzik's talents in this particular.
I think 93 and maybe 44 may or may not decide to be part of this consortium, but the rest of us already use Brandzik.
Okay. Yeah, well, 80, I'm pretty sure 87.
Oh, 87.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
They're the same. And so, and we're not on the. We wouldn't pay for any costs in, for a appeal on a property that's in a different elementary district.
No. No. It's all going to be apportioned upon the value of that property in that particular district.
Yeah. The appeal would only be filed in the involved districts.
Can you explain the timeline then, how a PTAB refund is different? I mean, most homeowners, you get your assessment in the late fall.
Correct.
And you can appeal that assessment. And we really don't care what the assessments are. It's not going to change our dollar amount based on CPI. It's just how it's divided up.
It's just sort of reapportioned.
So when are we really concerned what somebody's valuation is? These are going back to previous years saying, you have to refund me. Now, how many homeowners actually do that?
That's why residential is not even a consideration.
I receive very few of these types of appeals from residential properties. We receive several from commercial properties.
So this type of assessment, or you know, someone trying to lower their assessment, is really money out of our pocket that is never
correct.
As opposed to somebody, you know, gets their assessment in the fall, they appeal it, they get it changed.
The aggregate EAV,
we don't really, as long as it's not, that we don't fall below the limiting rate, we really have no incentive to go and argue what a piece of property is worth.
In this instance, we will, not when you receive your assessments in the fall, but rather when they're going back and appealing a 2008 or 2009.
Because their conditions have changed, and so
the only issue is commercial property generally has probably more resources to appeal their assessments, and it's just shifting the burden to the homeowners, which is a problem. I mean, but there's no incentive for us to go and reverse that process.
Unless they're looking for a refund.
Unless they're looking for a refund.
Correct.
Now, what about the village? They're not under PTEL and other things. They are basing their assessments on values of property. What do they do already for the commercial property within District 41? Do they already, what is their involvement with this? I would think the library and the village would be much more concerned year to year what commercial property is evaluated at.
I would think so.
But they're not part of this.
They are not part of this agreement.
Because they're not part of that law.
Okay. Oh, PTAB is not. It just has to do with PTEL districts? Okay.
Yeah. Yes. So again, this would be just for, I won't make that comment.
Right, you never know what might come up. But in general, these are larger corporations with the resources to go back through a number of years and seek refunds in what they've already paid out.
And typically, these are being represented by attorney groups that are going out, and they receive 33% of their first year savings as a fee. So these can be typically generated through attorney groups also. Yes, Drew.
How many of those requests do we get?
We received three in the past couple of weeks. These particular types
those
of
are
appeals.
Property. Those were property?
I mean,
personal property, like homeowner property?
We had three in the past couple of weeks. Two were commercial pieces of property. One was a residential.
Residential,
we won't even touch.
And we don't even fight all commercial. It just depends on the amount of taxes that would be lost and how far back it goes. I mean, if it was a small little store downtown, the loss would probably not be worth fighting.
Aris would probably say, Bob, let's just step away from this one. But as you'll see in the next board report, there are two pieces of property that are rather substantial size that we're going to be bringing a request for intervention to the Finance Committee to support shortly. So it's not small individual pieces of property. We're looking for large commercial pieces of property.
With big resources to fight this.
Typically.
Well, making it worth their while also.
Got to be worth their while to fight it.
Yeah.
And typically, how successful are we in terms of holding the line?
Well,
we were successful with ComEd.
We were successful with Commonwealth Edison. We stopped the going backwards. Now, what they did is they came up with a common valuation formula for all of their right-of-ways going forward, okay, which is what was happening with Commonwealth Edison. Every little assessor had their own way of looking at those right-of-ways, and so therefore they couldn't, there was no commonality. And so that was part of their argument as to getting all the reassessments done and also going backwards. But we stopped the going backwards.
Which is where the real hurt.
Which is where the real hurt would have been, because there's no way of recouping those tax dollars.
And that amounted to several hundred thousand dollars that we saved the district from having to refund.
Right. Okay. But you're going to bring us a report on those other two commercial pieces.
That's
our next item.
So I'm hearing support to move this recommendation forward to form the intergovernmental agreement with the Glenbard Feeder District.
So there's no downside to each of that.
Okay. All right, then the next order of business this evening is a resolution authorizing intervention and proceedings before the State of Illinois Property Tax Appeals Board. As I have just mentioned, in the past couple of weeks we received notices that a commercial property taxpayer has appealed from the DuPage County Board of Review to PTAB in Springfield. And as part of the process for Francis to represent us in this type of intervention, we need a resolution to be approved by the Board of Education allowing that intervention on our behalf. In particular, these two pieces of property, one was valued at about $4.9 million. The other was appraised at almost $2 million. They are looking for around a 30% reduction in their assessed valuation. And I did get an email from Dan Smith last week that says, you know, just give me a round about what does this represent in terms of dollars and a reduction. And if we did nothing to intervene, it would be about a $55,000 reduction in taxes for just 2008. Then you'd have 2009, and then there would be a reduction for the assessed valuation as we move forward also. So this has a considerable effect, not only for the year 2008, but we'll have a continuing effect regarding these two pieces of commercial property. So what we're looking for this evening is support to bring this to the board for. Actually, we'll be bringing it to the board this evening for discussion and then for action on January 18th because the Francis has to intervene on our behalf by the end of January. So that's why we need to sort of shorten that timeline that we typically use. And again, we did not receive these particular appeals in my office until the past 10 days to 2 weeks, a couple weeks.
What are the properties? Is that
two commercial apartment complexes located on the northern end of our district.
Okay.
And I don't recall the names offhand. I have them in the office.
Are they on North Avenue?
They're right near North Avenue, I believe. Mm-hmm. Say that again?
Willow Lake.
Yeah.
Oh, Willow Lake, so over by 50th, by Swift.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
That's probably one of them.
Yeah. There's two of them, and you know, I can.
Right, I was just curious. I didn't know if it was sealed or something.
No, it's not okay. Sealed. It's documented.
It's a public filing.
So that's what we're looking for this evening is your support that we, as we'll be taking this evening to the board for discussion, and then on January 18th for approval for Francis to intervene on our behalf in these, actually for all types of appeals. That we would want to contest from now, from 2008, 9, 10, and into 2011, prior to this new intergovernmental agreement being entered into with the Glenbard Consortium districts.
So this is prior to, that's what I was going to ask. Mm-hmm. Is this going to be under this government?
This will be under, no, that will not be covered under the intergovernmental agreement that we're bringing to you for approval in January, later this month and into February. This is specifically for our district.
Okay. Do we know, is 87 interested at all? Or?
You know, I don't know if 87's interested in it.
I think it might be worth a phone call to them. If they were served as well with the same.
In this case, they would we'd still each do our own intergovernmental agreements for this. We might work out a deal with sharing costs with Franzic, mm-hmm. but because of the timing of this, we wouldn't necessarily look to do it as a joint intergovernmental agreement.
Okay, but you can certainly share costs. Mm-hmm.
Just because of the timing.
Yeah.
Okay.
And this kind of goes to your point before, where why are we bringing this to finance and then to the board? And then because we think most things require this kind of discussion, but there are occasions when we don't have that time frame. So tonight we're bringing it both to finance and to discussion for action on the 18th. And that is what we used to do. 2 years ago, maybe, we switched over to doing the three-step process rather than just bring it to finance, go to discussion, and then because we felt that there should be a longer period of time to talk about most topics. But in this case, we need that shorter timeline in order to get it approved and
this has
proceed.
To be filed by January 31st.
And in most respects, this is a renewal of a previous agreement. This is not something new.
When did this... I was trying to think through the process of the appeal. So this is for actually, they're appealing taxes for last year, but the process took it
from 2008.
And 2008, which would be
the 2008 assessment that they paid in 2009.
That they paid in 2009.
And they've already appealed it to the DuPage County Board of Review, so they've lost there.
Okay.
Now they're taking it to PTAB in Springfield for a final appeals process, or they could ultimately take it to a court of law.
Okay. And if we don't do this,
we stand a chance. As I said, I've done the very preliminary calculations, and as a total, these two pieces of property represent about $55,000 a year in revenue to the district.
Well, I guess what the question Drew's asking is, there's still two advocates. There's still a board that could rule against their motion.
Yes.
We're just providing
the advocacy for our,
advocacy for our side.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Yes, that's correct. And without that advocacy, there's, I mean, not likelihood, but there's a greater chance that PTAB would say, well, the district is not concerned about this, so why not let the taxpayer have, you know.
And I think this would be the appropriate thing they do. I mean, there's no reason we shouldn't do that.
Okay. Okay, then, well, the next order of business was class size targets, but Laurie has already given us that board report. So then finally, the last order of business this evening is the master facility plan, and I'll leave that in Bob and Ann's hands.
Okay. Well, we only got 2 weeks to go, so Ann and I talked a little bit earlier this afternoon through which where we're at right now, right, is we've got in theory here three alternatives left, B7 and B8 and then K5 on Spalding, and I mean I think we need to at least decide between the middle school and the K5 on a large parcel. I think we talked a little bit about the idea of a K5, and you know, there's work to be done after this report is submitted. But part of that work could be figuring out the question of if we decide on the K5 solution, the next step for the board could be deciding whether it's going to be a large parcel or Spalding. So I guess I kind of see the first step in that is do we feel, does the Finance Committee feel like it needs to narrow it down to one of these remaining options?
What's the A option? Is that?
A's kind of out.
All the A options are out. So basically, we're with the B7 and the B8.
Or Spalding, which was
K5.
I can tell you in a second.
B4 maybe.
Maybe.
I thought we were going to leave one of the A's, but.
Well, presuming that for all options, even in the B series, there would be some renovations that have to occur at the elementary buildings,
right.
But not as significant,
okay.
Depending on what you built.
Also, I think one of the A's actually turned out that it probably should have been
B5, or the next grade level center.
Or was it the other way around?
It's B4.
Mm-hmm.
One of the A's actually should have been a B.
No, one of the B's should have been an A.
Oh, okay, got it.
Which was tear down
right.
And partial replace right. Building replacement.
There wasn't a new addition.
It was in the B series. It was
okay, but that one was eliminated.
Eventually, it was.
Yeah.
That was A6. Was building replacement. But nonetheless, I mean, what at the December 13th meeting, it was B3, I think, that we eliminated and we thought should have been in the
right.
A series.
So A6 was eliminated because in my notes it was retaining.
Well, only until December 13th.
Okay, that's fine. Mm-hmm.
At December 13th, if you recall, our conversation... You know, just kept narrowing until after doing the cost analysis, you know, at a 30,000 foot level, it was felt by, I think, a consensus of the board that A was more expensive than B in the long run. Pardon me?
On the long run. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, certainly from.
And more disruptive education
standpoint.
Yeah.
I mean, I think if you factored in the extra overhead cost of another school, you might,
right.
You know, you might get back to the main series, but my recollection is the consensus was that we were back, we were only on new school, and it's just a question of what's the new school?
Is it grammar school or is it the junior high?
Yeah.
Right.
And is it on Spalding or on the
B4 was based Spalding.
Yeah.
Okay, so we have the three.
B4, B7, and B8.
Well, what's your pleasure? You want?
I mean, I have my opinion. My feeling is K5 as opposed to a new middle school. For a couple of reasons. One, it's obviously more expensive than middle school.
Mm-hmm.
And then you. Not only is it more expensive to build a middle school than it is a K-5, but then you're locked into rehabbing Hadley then, which is pretty expensive, as we discussed in our December 13th meeting. So, whereas if you just build a K-5, then you're not really... I mean, you do have to do something at Hadley to eliminate portables, but it's not the extensive rehabilitation or remodeling that you would do to turn it into a K-5/ECE/CSO type of building. You know what I mean?
I thought the rehab of Hadley was more expensive than almost building the new junior high.
You're right. The whole program, you know, the 100+ million or whatever it is. Is expensive, right, to redo. I guess I was kind of looking at it as a first step, second step, you know, third step progression. Then the first step is building a K-5 on a new site is going to be less expensive up front than building a new middle school, because then you're absolutely locked in. I mean, I think you'd have to do them in the same referendum, so to speak. You have to have rehab money for Hadley to turn it into a K-5.
But the rehab of Hadley was going to be more expensive than building the new junior high, as I recall. I mean, knocking, you know, pulling that.
If you pull that whole wing down, right.
And redo Hadley, then you're almost, I think you were better off doing the new junior high, which will theoretically eliminate all the portables at one time. And then you don't have to do the whole remodel of Hadley, which was less expensive to turn Hadley into the grammar school than doing the full remodel.
Did we have a dollar number on that?
I don't have my little spiral notebook with me. We got last time from. Do you have that?
I have some downstairs.
I think the costs were similar in terms of the rehab of Hadley and building a new Hadley. I think you're correct there. There were things we discussed while Ron was still here about not demolishing a wing and not doing some other things. So it probably was a little iffier. In the end, I mean, you know, that analysis probably would have to be fine-tuned with some further analysis of what you would do with Hadley, you know, in terms of renovation. But if you did a strict renovation of Hadley to keep it a junior high,
it would be very costly. $56 million. Which is roughly the cost of building it. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I would think the facilities you want in a new junior high, middle school, for 21st century learning and the things we need, is going to be more rehabbing it than if Hadley were rehabbed for an elementary school. I think a lot of the spaces would allow you to use it nicely for an elementary school. Mm-hmm. The rooms, and that you've got enough gyms already, you don't need more fine arts space, you don't need more, performance space, other things that if you do a greenfield middle school, it's much less expensive to do all that up front than to try to redo it at Hadley and have a middle school that meets those needs.
Yeah, so I'm leaning to building the new junior high at the large site.
Yeah, I think obviously more numbers need to be run on things, but it just,
I think
back of the envelope, it just seems worthwhile exploring.
If you look at everything as a package, I think it costs less, and that's what my numbers were showing. It's less expensive to build a new Hadley, and then do the
are we still not? Mentioning the large parcel that we're all talking about, but not talking about. I mean, one of my other objections is based on that large parcel's location. And would you put, if you put your middle school there and a K-5 at where Hadley is, now you've got Hadley and Churchill and Forest Glen, within a stone's throw of each other, all drawing. I'm just thinking boundary wise. How do you pull kids out of a Lincoln or Franklin, for that matter, and put them where Hadley's at? You know what I mean? To relieve the pressure there. Whereas if you put the K-5 at the large parcel that we're not talking about, or not mentioning, you can conceivably see where you could pull kids out of at least one of those southern schools.
They're two blocks away. I don't think there's any difference. You do it one way place or the other. And I think there's details need to be worked out on all those things. To even if you looked at some other spot to say, okay, if you built a school here, what are the transportation costs? What would the boundaries look like? I mean, I think there's questions to be answered in all those. But I'm comfortable looking at it at a high level now and saying it's worthwhile getting more, exploring those options. I'm not saying right now that I know what the problems are going to be, one way or another.
Yeah, I guess I just see if you put a K-5 in that location, it seems more realistic to take kids south of the tracks to that location than it is to take them to where Hadley's at. I just know from driving to Hadley from the Lincoln area that compared to driving to the large parcel location is, just feels different.
I don't know.
They're a block away from each other.
I don't think that's I think Hadley has more sidewalks, is more accessible as a neighborhood school than the large parcel.
It's definitely a more neighborhood school, but I guess my issue is you've got two neighborhood schools right there as well already. I guess from a geographic balance picture,
not considered a neighborhood school.
Well,
it's not.
Yeah. Well,
because of the number of students who are transported compared to the other. The
they're all in neighborhoods.
I mean, from somewhere. A geographic balance standpoint, I always pictured Spalding anyway as a more optimal location because there's nothing up there for that whole area.
Yeah, I would say.
But then that's not that far from Forest Glen.
Yeah, to show. And then, you know, if you build a school there, do you start having to bus students who are south of Five Corners, north of Five Corners? I mean, what do you do then?
I don't know.
I would like to see the analysis.
You'd have to do, I mean, in either of your options, I mean, in the B series, in building a new building, you would have to redistrict everything in the elementaries.
Unless you're going to add on, I mean, you probably have to add on at least at one or two locations, don't you think?
But you still, if you're building a new building, unless you're deciding that three of your, what would then be five buildings, will be smaller buildings, and the other two buildings remain the same, you're going to have to move everybody to shift the numbers in order to make them house equitably. So yeah, unless you're doing additions and agreeing that some schools will, you know, remain at 650 or, you know, as opposed to more like a 500.
Yeah, I'm just concerned. We're planning for our current enrollment, you know, which has been very steady, and I mean it's hard to say where it's going to go. I think we definitely need to probably start thinking about another enrollment estimate going forward, just to get a new idea, since the ones we have are probably getting dated. But that, you know, maintaining four elementary schools, if we start to add students again, I think are just going to make them too big. I think we ultimately need to go to five elementary schools, and that you're going to have boundary changes with that no matter what. Mm-hmm. And then if you've got, you know, where you could rehab Hadley, you've got a lot of space there to plan for the future that you don't. Mm-hmm. It can be used for things now, but building a Greenfield Middle School, you can definitely plan for something that could exceed 1,200 students. You know, you may not have to build for it now, but plan and say, you know, we could easily add this if we did swell to a larger middle school. I don't think anyone's thinking now we want to go to two middle schools in the district. So if we're going to have one middle school that's 6, 7, 8. You know, we're at 1,200 students right now.
The other thing is the concept of how do you eliminate all the portables with one project,
mm-hmm.
and that'll eliminate all the portables.
Bob is right. If you, with building a new middle school, you'd have to at the same time do Hadley, renovate Hadley. In order to achieve that.
Right. And the cost of renovating Hadley is about the same as starting from scratch.
Well, if you build an elementary school, I don't know if you demolish the wing of classrooms and other things. I don't know. We didn't see an estimate of making Hadley an elementary school.
If I recall, the conversation was you could do it like putting smaller washrooms in there, if I recall.
Well, I'm not simplifying it to that detail. I'm just thinking the needs of a K-5 are a little different than your 21st century middle school, and I think what we know a lot of community members would like to see in a middle school here, which we haven't been able to do.
Well, the factor for the community around a new middle school certainly would be that every child would benefit from that new school.
Right. And the farthest away, that they're 6th, 7th, and 8th grade. So no matter where you are now, I mean, you're targeting some time you're going to go there if you're not out of the district by the time you go to middle school.
I think that's the longest term approach.
Well, it gives you a continued. I mean, I would have concerns that if the enrollments grow to such an extent that you're talking about a 1,400 size middle school, that you'd be concerned about that size. But to split a 1,200 into two 600 junior highs.
Right.
When your elementaries are already at that size, doesn't make, any
right.
kind of economic sense.
The middle school option, though, I mean, a middle school is 50-plus million. Right?
Mm-hmm.
And then Hadley's got to be 15.
I think that was the number that we talked about, 15-ish.
So your referendum, your first phase of the vision, right, the long-term
mm-hmm.
vision here, is $65 million.
Mm-hmm. Which, I mean, I guess I would say, that while that's a very rough figure, I don't think that's an unusual figure, because the you're getting the bulk of your work done right off of the bat, with your long-term plan being aimed at bringing the elementary schools into a 21st century learning environment over a period of, the next X amount of years. So it is true, you pay the most up front, but the managing of the remainder of the needs, I think, is more easily done over a longer period of time.
And what, do we have K-5 on a new site?
What was a K-5 on a
yeah,
new site? 28 or something like that? 27?
But just for the school, but it didn't solve the problem of
no.
the middle school, which would still
it
have...
It doesn't solve the problem.
Still got 10 affordables, right?
Yeah.
I mean, again, kind of back of the envelope, I'm looking at remodeling Hadley and switching the wings was $56 million bucks, as opposed to $50 million to build it. And then the cost of converting Hadley to a grammar school was $15 million, as opposed to $24 million to build it. And just back in the envelope numbers.
I guess the Hadley rehab, I'm just, the pressing needs at Hadley that we have, other than the 10 portables, are what? The pod space?
Well,
that's probably the least satisfied area. I mean, if we could knock something down, it would be the performing arts, right?
Mm-hmm. And I think your athletic spaces, your
cafeteria.
Mm-hmm. Certainly, there are classroom changes that you would want to see, but yeah.
And I'm just wondering if you go K-5 for the 28th, and then you hit the cafeteria and the performing arts, build a new performing arts center where the pods are. And add on to your cafeteria out to the north end or something along those lines. You hit the worst areas of Hadley right now. I just don't. I mean, that wing, tearing down that wing and basically building a new wing. I mean, it just seems so. You're knocking something down to rebuild it. Granted, you're going to get better space out of it, but is that the most pressing need?
Well, I think if you're going to do something, if you don't do it all, you're just blocking one hand. Because you're not addressing, the basement is really not usable space. There's the issues with.
Well, which basement though? We do use the basement right now, right?
We do.
Of the wing.
It's not optimal.
I mean, there are structural issues with that. There's
There's air quality issues. We know there's air quality issues.
So.
But I to take it out of the specific and put it into the more general, what you're saying about is that if you build to K-5 or pre-K-5, because I would presume we'd want to put pre-K classrooms into a new facility, then you could just, with minor renovations throughout, you could address the larger areas of Hadley at a lower cost.
Or in the future, if you are concerned about that wing, then that would be, you know, a later phase of the whole change. And granted, it's just as expensive to do it at Hadley, but your first phase is addressing your K-5 portable issues. You know what I mean? You're knocking out what I think people would feel probably is the biggest issue that we've got space-wise, and that's at the local elementary level.
I don't know that I would agree with that exactly in terms of where your greatest space issues are. I think Hadley has tremendous space issues that we don't have. I think they're equally bad across the district. Probably we don't hear about them as much at Hadley because
people aren't as involved at Hadley.
Right.
Which means your voters aren't as involved at Hadley. Right, so if you're going to try and sell the voters on something, what's easier? What are they going to be more concerned about? Their K through fives or their sixth, seventh, and eighth graders?
Well, if I go back to Steve's argument, which is you build who needs a state of the art facility more, the elementary students or the junior high students in terms of creating and preparing those 21st century skills, you know, one might argue that you put it into your junior high because those are the students who are going to transition into the high school with different a level of expectations, and so you want to give them those experiences.
Again, I go back to the, how do we eliminate all the portables at one time?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if we're going to do something, we have to address the biggest issue, as I understand, the biggest issue is, you know, eliminating the portables.
Mm-hmm.
If that's truly the mandate from the community, so let's get rid of the portables. This is the solution for that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
but I think you can work that into either solution. It's just you got to do. You build a new K-5 that can draw from a Lincoln, Churchill Forest Glen, obviously. You could draw from Lincoln. You'll have to draw some kids presumably from Franklin, or maybe that's where you build, you know.
Yep.
Maybe you add on to Franklin, build a new K-5, and then you've got to add on to Hadley. So if we're talking, if we did something at Hadley with, I think maybe what I'm thinking about is we have this plan, forget about the new site or whatever, you have this vision for Hadley to be rehabilitated, and it's going to cost either 55 to build it new somewhere else, or it's going to cost 59 to build it where Hadley is right now. So you take those portions of, like, maybe the performing arts area and those 10 portables, you know, and the extra parking that we've seen on some of the drawings. Can you work that part of it into, you know, that west end of Hadley, and then you address maybe the cafeteria? Can you work these portions that you really need to address right away at Hadley, the 10 classrooms or more that we want to plan for a larger enrollment, the extra classrooms needed, the performing arts space, which is suboptimal, and then the cafeteria space, which is suboptimal, and then you leave for your later phases that whole wing that's got, you know, air quality issues or whatever.
But how do you do that while kids are going to school there? And you just push that problem on to somebody else. I don't know if I want to solve the problems and the details you're talking about in terms of knowing what the boundaries are and other things beyond. You know, we need a new part. Spalding is not a good parcel to build on because we only have 3 acres there that we own, and, you know, building an elementary or a junior high probably wouldn't work there. To say, okay, a large parcel. I can see the elementary or junior high, you know, maybe the recommendation is we need, you know, to get more involvement and get more detail with that, you know, where we do need some boundary options or other things. I don't think it's our job to figure out little details of boundaries, you know, to say what's the best option without having professional input on all that stuff.
Well, when Bob and I talked earlier today, was part of the conversation we had was, do we need to come down to a single recommendation to take back to the board? You know, right now we have three that we've narrowed the conversation to, B4, B7, and B8. And is it better to narrow that down to at least an elementary or a junior high? I mean, I don't know that... If it's an elementary, you have still conversations about whether it's a new parcel of land or Spalding. If it's obviously a junior high, you don't have that conversation. You have to find a new parcel of land. And so then the conversation is directed by that. Where is the new parcel of land? Is there something we can, you know, access? Do we... Either conversation takes us down a path, making no... single recommendation is going to send us down a divergent path.
Okay.
You know, from my perspective, you know, from a work perspective, it's, you know, doesn't matter to us which way we go. We can do the work. Obviously, there's a cost involved if we're going to bring architects or demographers in to help us with that. So I suppose from a cost standpoint, the narrower your recommendation is, the more cost effective your research is going to be. But so, I don't know.
Well, I guess it depends if the board can agree on one recommendation, too, or the finance committee or whatever.
I would be concerned at this point. It doesn't sound like you three are in agreement. So, to get the whole board in agreement, I don't know whether, you know, I don't know.
I don't know if Bob's playing devil's advocate or he feels this. You feel strongly one way or another. I mean, I'm open to somebody, and I'm saying, I don't know if I have all the details. You know, I could be persuaded that it's better to do this, but I need more input. I need a better argument. You haven't given me a good argument to say that's the best. But, you know, I might not have the majority opinion. So I'm not saying I know what's best.
I mean, if the finance committee can't come to a decision, then all we can do is present where we've arrived at, as to whether it's middle school or K-5.
Yeah. I'm in agreement with that.
In agreement that you have no agreement. That if you take just the two of you,
right?
You know, leave. If Steve's not in the conversation,
yeah, that's fine.
No. We want you in the conversation. That's not the point. The point is that the two representing finance board members have opposing viewpoints.
Right.
Can we eliminate Spalding?
I would say not if you are talking elementary only.
Okay.
That you would want to keep it.
I mean, my opinion, and I were talking about Spalding earlier, my opinion is if you were to do Spalding, then you have to get more land, right? So
right.
It's either going
to
be... Then you're talking about either eminent domain or you're talking, or you think about it in long terms where you're saying we're going to institute, you know, a policy of getting every parcel to the west or east or both of Spalding that we can get, you know, through agreements, you know, right of first refusal or whatever, or right of purchase, or have some kind of policy where when a property comes up for sale, we get it.
Yeah. Which I think is ultimately is going to be more expensive.
Which you have to be committed to. Yeah. You have to be committed to eminent domain.
At some point you might wind up with eight out of nine, and that one sitting right in the middle, and you can't do anything without it.
You may have a future board who's not in favor of making those purchases, or where the district can't financially make those purchases. Mm. You know, another possibility is, and this is probably. You know, it's just is taking, you know, where you've narrowed it to at this point, and I think there has been consensus to this point. Now, obviously, you know, you still have three options out there, but you've reached consensus that building new is better than renovating existing. you know,
it's a better
major.
Value. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a better value.
Long term.
So it's possible that, you know, we could enlist further study around the options that are available that we have right now.
At what point would we engage the community?
Well, that's what I'm suggesting, that you might choose to have a, you know, another task force or another group come together to begin to examine the where you've narrowed it down to do some of that detail work. Again, you know, what is the board willing to ask administration and consultants to do to get further details out, so that, because I think if you're going to ask a community group to come in and try to go through this, we have to have more detail. Otherwise, their hands are tied. They're in the same place you are, which is it's hard to make narrow that field without a little bit more information.
I would say, I mean, I think from our standpoint, from the Finance Committee standpoint, is we can provide in our short-term recommendations the recommendation of the board has to decide upon, you know, X, Y, and Z, and then the board can decide, all right, we want to take this piece or this piece out to the community. And, you know, I don't even know if we should suggest what goes out to the community and what doesn't, because that's going to be a board initiative to do that, mm-hmm. not the Finance Committee. So I think we need to identify, you know, what the next step, what we think the next step is. You know, our recommendation for the next step the board should take is X, Y, and Z, and maybe X and Y goes out to the community, and Z is just a board decision. You know
right.
what I mean?
Right.
And then they can the board can decide how to proceed on involving the community in the next step.
So what's X and Y, or Z?
Well, I don't know. I mean, if we're resolved on that we can't resolve anything, I'm trying to think what's the next step. I mean, is the next step
we can't
board figure it out? Do you want?
We can't eliminate any of the options.
We can't choose between these two options.
And what
do middle school? Or, well. I'm kind of lumping in new K-5.
Because if you go with a K-5, you can determine land as a secondary part of that discussion. It's a question of whether it's K-5 or 6-8.
Right.
Because the board can decide, well, Spalding is not going to work. And then it's...
So then we're down to really two options.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes, that's what I'm saying. That we're at two options, but we can't decide which one we prefer.
Well, and it may be that the proper thing is for the board to make the full board to kind of discuss through that. I think you got a start on that on December 13th.
Mm-hmm.
But by the end of our time, you know, where you landed with strength was that you have three areas, B4, B5, B4, 7, and 8.
As far as other short-term or, you know, short-term recommendations, things the board needs to work on right away, I guess would be, do we want a recommendation around land acquisition or investigation?
I think we have to do that.
Or is the board already giving you a direction on that?
Well, I would not say officially that there's been a direction to pursue that in an, you know, a proactive way. And I think if that is a very short term next step, because we either have to begin, you know, creating a strategy and look for people who can help us with that, or we're dancing around the head of a pin for, you know.
Just trying to think of other short,
well,
short-term
so you,
recommendations.
Short-term is decide which, K5 or 6-8.
Choices.
K5, 6-8, right? That's the first short-term decision the board has to make.
Mm-hmm.
Then they have to decide whether, that must happen simultaneously, whether they wish to have us begin a search for land.
Mm-hmm.
Is another K5
Well, I think the search for land has to happen regardless of which option you pick.
Exactly. Exactly. That's why they have to happen simultaneously.
Can we make that recommendation?
That you direct the administration to...
I guess we can make that recommendation.
Recommending to the board that we should establish a search for large parts.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I think we do have that agreement. We are agreement to that. Because I think we need to do that.
Mm-hmm. I mean, do we need to recommend? I mean, we're going to kind of probably touch on it this evening in the other discussion, and that is, do we need to recommend that the board decide whether property acquisition should be pursued from our reserve?
Is that a discussion that we want to do? Because it's on our agendas.
Right, that's what I mean. But I mean, as far as our recommendation for next steps.
Well, if I separate those two discussions just a bit. One, I think that the discussion on fund balance is a broader discussion. Mm-hmm. I'm anticipating that given the length of a reasonable meeting, you're not going to be able to end that conversation tonight, that you'll get it started, mm-hmm. but you won't end it because there are other tentacles to it.
Right.
If this group believes that it would make that recommendation, it certainly could happen kind of as on a parallel track and maybe even inform the other conversation. But if you felt that as a committee, we would recommend using current fund balances to purchase land, then you could make that as one of your recommendations. Mm-hmm. If you didn't feel that you could strongly, or you weren't, if you didn't have consensus on that, then you could say that's a short term. And that could happen outside of that other discussion, which may go to policy, which, you know, there may be other paths that discussion's going to take.
I would agree with that. We could recommend. You could.
Yeah, well, I'd be behind purchase of land as an option.
Mm-hmm. So basically we have consensus on two things.
This is just a committee recommendation.
Yeah, I as a general thing, yeah, I would think obviously you need specifics each time, but you know, as a viable way, if it made sense, yeah.
Because they're one-time purchases that don't use, they're not structural deficits.
No.
They're not operational costs.
Right. I mean, they're not going to put us in the hole. June,
right.
Every year,
right.
Not going to issue tax anticipation.
Long-term planning is what it is.
Probably get a better rate of return.
our 0.25.
It probably, you're probably right.
Not that that's the point, but right. You know, at this point.
Okay, so you have two recommendations.
And three options. Or
Two options. And you have two short-term plans.
Do we need a recommendation around enrollment?
Oh, no, you actually have you have a recommendation. I'm sorry, you have three. You have the recommendation of K-5 or 6-8. You have the recommendation to search for land. And you have the recommendation that if land is found that would be a viable purchase, that you would recommend fund balances be used for that. Okay.
Do we have... I think in our design criteria for the alternatives, we had selected 3,700. But do we want any recommendation around further demographics
studies? When was the last time we did that?
Updated demographic study.
I think
06.
'06.
So is that? Is it?
It's been 5 years.
Would it make sense to do another?
Sure. Mm-hmm.
What the relative cost, just kind of back of the envelope?
Mm-hmm. I think it was $5,600 when we did it
yeah.
6 years
okay,
ago.
So it's not
between 5 and 10.
Yeah.
Okay. That's not enough.
I can't. Right. The only reason that just jumps out at me, I don't know why that number does.
So that I think that would be another recommendation to do a new demographic.
Just out of curiosity, and we talked a little bit about changing or changing demographics or trends in demographics as far as Churchill and Lincoln are concerned. Is that, would that be part of, can we make, should we make that part of that study too? I mean, it doesn't, well, I mean, it could somewhat impact our facilities discussions, but does it,
I
would
think
it help, I mean, if we're doing it, do they do that level of analysis?
I think we could
suburbs?
Ask that question. I think the demographic study that's been done in DuPage around our changing population, whether or not that can be disaggregated down to our level.
And their census data just came out. That's new. That some a demographer would make use of also that wasn't done before.
But we could certainly ask that that question, or where might we find out whether or not programmatically our demographics are going to affect our facilities.
Yeah. And I've talked to him about, I mean, I would want a demographer to really work with the boundaries of our district, not what Carroll Stream's doing, you know, because we've got a strip
when you
of,
grab the
of townhomes, right. You know, that at what greater Carroll Stream's doing, is it really relevant to the portion in District 41 or even Lombard or any town, you know, or even just
well,
after
I assume
one out.
Can get the census data.
Well,
that
you know, we may ask, what's changed in the last 5 years? What can you provide us now, you know, that's available from census and other things that's going to be a, you feel, better estimate, you know, more tailored to the boundaries of our district.
Okay, so that's a recommendation. I'm going to interrupt for just one moment. I noticed that we're at 7:17, and erroneously we posted our board meeting with the same date at the same time as our hearing, which we don't need. No, we're not having a hearing, but our posting was posted for 7:15. So we have, we'll start at 7:30. That's fine. But I noticed that we have some members in the audience. I just wanted to make that note that we'll begin at our regular time. But if you're wondering why we're still carrying on at 7:17, that's why. So, okay, we have a recommendation. So we're increasing our recommendations, and for short-term plans, not much at this point. But the recommendations really are the short-term plans, too, because a demographic study and all of those could actually just fall into short-term recommendations. Long-term recommendation then is a decision on a building program.
Yeah, I mean that's short-term, but it obviously is.
But the building, but then what we could be saying is that the long-term plan is yet to be developed. Board needs to make some decisions about who should be involved in that long-term planning. And
I get, you know, it changes the phases of the long-term plan depending on which choice you go for. One does, as we said, a lot up front. One does a little less up front. Subsequent phases are larger.
In terms of engaging the community, is that a recommendation that we would make, or would that be implicit in going back to the board?
I think what I'm hearing from your discussion would be that it's you're not at a stage to make a recommendation about how and who and when to engage. But as part of the long-term planning, that would have to be a decision made. So the first thing that has to be decided is K-5-6-8. And I think I heard from Bob, and you know, I would just I'll say it, and then you can echo back to whether that was accurate or not. That is a board decision that has to be made first.
Then I guess I would, since the board's going to initiate the conversation with the community if it goes that direction. I'd let the board decide what they want to talk about.
What and when and how.
The form that the engagement will take.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So it's really not
and
up
content.
To us.
Yeah.
So I just wanted to ask the question.
Since we've only got 10 minutes, let's talk about our schedule and where we think we're at as far as our next meeting and whether we need to
schedule another meeting or whether we can have a report.
Beg the forbearance of the board.
The original commitment was to have a report to the board by the end of January. I suggested to Bob today that perhaps that report was geared predominantly as a means of keeping the board on track and some kind of a timeline and ensuring that movement was occurring. If you need more time, I would think giving a full board status report both tonight and on the 17th, you know, might allow them to give you some leeway on a report, a formalized report coming in February or something like that. But Bob and I talked a little bit today about what kind of report are we talking about. You know, how big is this report? How detailed is this report? Who is the audience for this report? Might determine the degree to which it can be prepared by the 17th or prepared, you know, needing a longer period of time.
I mean, we've pretty much flushed everything out that we could flush, I think. It's just how is it?
It's a matter now of when can we
how
get
is it
constructed,
I guess.
Yeah, how to construct it, when can we do it, and what's the depth and scope of that report. I mean, you have the table of contents here. Bob and I talked a little bit about that today, in terms of what that will entail, and so is that a report then that is really, you know, any report that goes to the board is a public document, but is it being written for that purpose? You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. That we can give it out to people as opposed to it's a board report. It's on our web, it's accessible, but it's not written with a little spiral, you know. And
right, it's a different audience. Like,
yeah, who is your audience? Is it the board, or is it a broader public?
I think it's the board.
I think it is. Is that the board or that?
But obviously anyone can pick it up and
right.
Look at it, so it's got to be
right. You know, but then the detail, if it's just for the board, the detail that needs to be included is less. Because the board's been in the conversation all
along.
Yeah,
it is. It's less, and it also assumes a level of fluency in the discussion.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm fine with that.
Okay.
Yeah.
So would we be looking at, I mean, I assume what we're saying is now on your end.
I'd draft it.
Yeah, but so would we be looking at a draft at the committee level next meeting or the first meeting in February?
Well, I'll meet whatever timeline you give me. If the draft were to go to the committee next meeting, then you would be able to give that kind of a detailed report to the board both tonight and then give them a final report or do a final report in the first meeting in February.
Okay.
Okay.
Let's shoot for that.
I think that's in the spirit of the charge that we were given.
Mm-hmm.
I'm good with that. If Anne thinks that she can get it done.
Well, the only other option you have really is to meet next week, and I have a preliminary draft for you next week so that it can go to the board by the Thursday of next week.
That sounds like an onerous task. Is that?
Well, it certainly gives me a little bit more breathing room to have it for the 17th for the Finance Committee. I would certainly say that, but. You know, I'll prioritize my work around the level of need of this work.
Would it be possible to get us
a draft before the 17th?
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely.
I'm thinking a draft next week.
Mm-hmm.
Internally.
We can.
Mm-hmm.
We can.
And then we can send, you know, our comments back to you, and then
right.
maybe, you know, so the rough draft next week. You know, first draft.
And then we do a little bit more reviewing
right.
on the 17th.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I'm good with that. If
and that will. What I'll probably do is try to get that to you early next week, so that you can get comments back to me by, like, Thursday,
mm-hmm.
the end of the day.
Okay.
Okay. So I'll make my deadline Tuesday. Okay.
Anything else? Steve? Erica? Drew?
No, thanks for letting me just sign in.
Okay, I guess we're good, Bob.
And I will follow this outline.
Okay.
That's a plan.
Are we expecting Erica, Tara and John? Well, Dan said he wasn't
Dan
sure.
Dan said he wasn't sure he was. And he didn't. Did you get a text or anything from him?
I did not get anything more saying
he was not feeling well. But yeah, I'm expecting John and.
Okay.
I expect this is the first board meeting we've had in a long time where everybody's in town.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Dan's sick. Shucks. But I'll go check my phone and see if he sent me something. Okay, Bob.
So that's it for this evening.